This is Kathleen Ermitage. I'm the researcher for the Oral History Peace Studies Project. I'm with Prudence Moylan, and we are at Piper Hall at the Loyola's Lakeshore campus. It's March 26, 2015. I'd like to begin by asking you if you would to state your name and your title and anything that you'd like to share about your experience and your expertise.
My name is Prudence, Prudence Moylan, and I'm a professor emerita at Loyola. With my formal training is in history, modern British history, and my other interest is women's studies, gender studies, so I was affiliated faculty member of women's studies, gender studies at Loyola. And in recent years, I would say maybe the last 10 or so, I moved away from British history particularly and started teaching more women's history and peace history. So my field kind of meandered away from my original education, but it was a great foundation because doing modern British history gives you a global perspective. So you kind of see Britain as a very small place in a much larger world, even though it exercised enormous power for a while there. So it was a good perspective to understand as an American trying to study peace.
Very good. Thank you. That's an interesting background that you brought to the development of the Peace Studies program. I'm grateful for that explanation. The focus of the project, as you know, is to better understand the transition from all of the great work at Mundelein and how it was transferred over to Loyola to form a minor. I'm wondering if we could begin by learning from your perspective how that process started.
Okay, that's a little bit of a challenging question for me because the process, I guess I would like to talk about the process at Mundelein. The process when I got to Loyola is a second level for me, or a second stage.
Okay. Oh,
so
like
I really would like to say what it was that was going on at Mundelein and what we created at Mundelein that was then our, and then we negotiated with Loyola about what was acceptable to them and what wasn't.
Yes, please tell me about the Peace Studies program at Mundelein. And then,
So I'm a historian, so you're going to have to bear with me for lots of context, you know. Certain amount of detail, although my details may not be as sharp as I would like. But anyway, it was hard to find a starting point. The archives on the Peace Studies project at Mundelein, I think, starts in 1939. I can't remember why the students did something then that was, Carol Francis always said was, you know, we were already doing it in that pastime. But I would really start it in the 1960s, I suppose, because I think the work, the Second Vatican Council, well, even before that, the encyclical Pacem in Terris, really raised attention to peace and human rights as part of the Catholic tradition. And actually, Pacem in Terris is the first time the Catholic Church really recognizes human rights as developed through the UN and, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt and all. So Pope John 23rd really says, yes, human rights are part of our tradition. I mean, this is a new way of naming them, and we're happy to affirm that we too are committed to these statements of human rights. So that was a really big change that preceded the Second Vatican Council. But the Second Vatican Council was really rethinking the place of the church in the modern world. That was one of the great documents that came from it. And it was a really important document in Carol Francis's theology and in her work. So and actually for me too, I was born in 1939, so I grew up in a very triumphal church. Sort of, we are going to have parallel and equal institutions to the secular world, you know, Catholic schools all the way up, and you know, CYO and all kinds of sports programs or whatever. So, and there were a lot of reasons for that, but in the 1960s, and from actually the gathering of the world's bishops at the council and from John XXIII's leadership, really, really opened up a new way of being in the world. And so it was, you know, fresh air, open the windows, let the new ideas come in, and go out. So I entered the BVMs in 1959, and in the early, Carol Francis was in a master's program in theology at Marquette. Again, this was one of the first graduate programs in theology for Catholics where women were admitted, because they were not admitted to seminaries, and even graduate schools of theology didn't admit women. Marquette opened its program with a summer school program, mostly for women religious. The date's escaping me. The PhD program was more like 62 or 64. The MA program was more like 57. So she was teaching at Holy Angels, I think, in Milwaukee, and going to the summer school in at Marquette. And when she, I think she had, I guess she formally finished her MA maybe in 58. But in 1957, Ann Ida Gannon, who had come to Mundelein in 54 and had arranged with the leadership of the BVMs that for her initiatives and her work at the college, she first was a faculty member. By 57, she became president. And she asked the BVMs to send Sister Carol Francis here to develop a theological program for women at a women's college that would be shaped by women. So the idea of women studying theology and then women, you know, being equal in terms of a theological program and an education for younger people. So Carol Francis, from 57 to 68, was very focused on developing a theology major for the undergraduates, and then almost at the same time the graduate program began. And her education at Marquette had included a lot of the theology that would become formally approved by the Vatican Council. So in the this theology that wasn't just newly invented, already in the 20th century, biblical scholarship, other kinds of pastoral theology and scriptural, well, I said scriptural theology and ecclesiology, the understanding of the church, were all in process. And she was educated in that new understanding. So even before the Second Vatican Council, that's what we were taught. And I was a novice in Dubuque from 59 to 61. And so the leaders of the BVM congregation were also interested in young members learning the theology of the new insights. So we had visiting scholars come to Dubuque and talk to us about all this new theology, about Christology, the Trinity, Scripture. Incredible. I had incredible theological education. And it's all because of Carol Francis's, and then others joined her, but she was kind of the central figure of linking the BVMs, young and old, to the theological experts that were actually the periti at the Second Vatican Council. So that was what I learned. Then when I came to Mundelein to finish my degree, which I finished in 63, that continued. And Carol Francis and others started a lecture series. Well, they had various lecture series where she would bring in these theological experts. But then in 1961, I think, she started this sort of summer lecture series where she might have two or three different outstanding theologians, mostly men. Weren't too many women who were at that rank then, you know, there are now, but, and all of Chicago, I mean, the priests and women religious and students would come, you know, we'd have 800, 900, 1,000 people in the Mundelein Auditorium for these lectures during a week of review of this. All of these were taped by Sister Mary, I think it's Mary Margaret Whalen, who worked really closely with Carol Francis. And that was the beginning of what's called the Mundelein College Religious Education materials. But from 61 on, these tapes were collected, and then the BVMs, let me go forward then. So all of this is happening already for us. But the Second Vatican Council, the Pacem in Terris is written, which opens up this idea of the church is lives in the world and is open to the world and is engaged with the world, not a separate enclave that is somehow pure or, you know, superior. And this is a very old conflict between, you know, the kings and the popes. And so this was a 20th century. It was really an opening to democracy in a, with human rights and all, and also a kind of return to a sense of the church as the communion of the faithful. So from 64 to 66, when the actual council took place, there were lots of new images for the church, you know, the pilgrim people, the people of God. And this was all about the community of saints, as it were, you know. Now, I mean, theologically, another foundation for the Second Vatican Council was the development of the theology of the mystical body of Christ, which comes from the 30s and the 40s. So that was part of the push toward this sense of participation and relationship. So the doctrine, or the declaration on the church in the modern world, which I think is Gaudium et Spes, which is has an opening phrase which I can't recite exactly, but it was very meaningful to Carol Francis. And it basically says the joys and sorrows of the world are our sorrows too, that we are one with all of the people of the world. So that is the role of the church, you know, and isn't it nice that we have a new pope who is really trying to respond that way? It was a moment in the 60s, and there was a lot of pullback from that, but the 60s were very real for me, so that was a formative world. I was very thrilled. I was well-educated. I was, you know, enormously energized. So what else happened? 60s. In addition to many important documents on the Catholic Church, the council issued a, I don't know what the formal name of it is. Anyway, it was on the renewal of religious life. And so all religious women and men everywhere in the world were invited to return, kind of sort of directed, to return to their origins and their founding charism, and to rethink the way in which that inspiration would be lived out in the modern world. So, as you may know, there's a lot of tension between the Vatican and women religious in the United States. Because women religious in the United States took very seriously that request. And as a result, they really changed their relationship with the larger world, and they went back to a much more foundational and simple gospel commitment to be disciples of Jesus, which means, a nomadic existence in a way, and a response to wherever there was need, where people were not there. And so the institutional framework and all of the sort of power of women dissolved in some ways. Partly it was change in the larger world, as we know, about hospitals and number of women entering religious life and all of that. But that was an engagement they had with also the kind of work of the Spirit in their lives. Because, of course, none of these communities had started with enormous, powerful institutions or, a great influence in society. So this was a return to this foundational work. And for many Catholics and for many clergy who like to see sisters as kind of their helpers rather than as equals in terms of witnesses and servants in the Christian life, there's a kind of feeling of concern about whether the sisters are really able to be Christians without the direction of the bishops and Rome, rather than recognizing that the sisters bring insights and understandings of Christianity that are not available to clerical men. And so this is a broadening and opening of the church. So that discussion is going on as we speak. But it's part of this long story. And for women religious and bishops, it goes back to their founding. They were always being challenged because somehow they were too determined to follow their own sense of the Spirit rather than waiting for the bishop to tell them what it was. And that's an ongoing tension. So anyway, Carol's part of all that, all the new theology. She's very involved with the BVMs in rewriting their constitutions in order to incorporate this sense of their work in the world. And I can't quote to you all of the things in the constitutions, but the fundamental one is, I think it's Article 10, but anyway, it's about experiencing freedom and sharing that sense of freedom with everyone, inviting everyone to share in the freedom of the gospel and of Christ. And then it's in education, justice, and there's a third one. So anyway, the BVMs, along with other communities, started in 68. These new constitutions were all pretty much approved by 1989. It was supposed to be a 20-year period to do this, so that's when that ended. So they had new constitutions, and they had incorporated all that. So that's all available to people if they want to look at it. But it was very transformative of the sisters' community. So their way of understanding the work of the gospel brings us to peace. See, I told you it was a long, winding road to get there. But this is the context of her Catholic, but transformative Catholic understanding of peacemaking. Carol Francis also had a deeply Catholic, a deep prayer life. And it was very focused on the Eucharist. And her insight into the work of the Vatican Council and into the work for justice and peace in the world was that they were integrally related, because without the Eucharist, without the deepening relationship with Christ, then the work of peace couldn't proceed, and the work of justice. So they were necessary, and one had to sustain the other. It's like the source of nourishment and encouragement came from your Christian experience of prayer, and that was expressed in your activism and your work for justice in the world. So it's a simple, you know, but also very different and transformative from what Catholics often thought of as the catechism and, you know, kneeling in church and going to confession. And not that any of those things were not still there, but there was a whole different way of understanding this. Okay, so...
If I could...
Yeah.
Yeah, step in here just for a moment, because I'm very much appreciative of the big picture and how you're describing the new ideas that were coming through just as you were, you know, in the 60s, and as you mentioned, you're well-educated, and then there's this transformation taking place. And not only that, but you're also working closely, it sounds like, with Carol Frances Jagan.
Well, first she was my teacher. It wasn't until the late 60s that then I became a faculty member and worked with her.
Yeah, and I, you know, what I'm very interested in is there's this understanding that, of course, the Peace Studies program was at Mundelein, and that then it was brought over to Loyola. So there's all this prologue in terms of how it was formed, the ideas that informed the program there, and the people that were involved that made it happen, well before anything came over to Loyola.
Or any peace program was formalized.
Or
this is all the prelude to new ways of doing justice and peace. And so the Jesuits, of course, had the same religious charge for them. I don't know the story of all their renewal, but they also participate, of course, in all these different ways in the council and in the meaning of the council for them. And in 1971, there was a World Synod, and that was the title of it was something like Justice in the World. And the bishops basically said at that time, very specifically, that faith must be expressed in works for justice. They are equally obligatory for Catholics. There is no separation of faith and works. Of course, that's an old, all the way back to the Protestant Reformation, but they were, they brought it together, and that's even been strengthened. Even Benedict XVI is talking about charity and justice as together. So that's an ongoing foundation that they share. And the Jesuits then developed a collection of essays that was very, again, influential. In Carol Frances's thinking about this was the faith that does justice. So that's kind of I'm setting up the common tradition that allowed the BBMs and the Jesuits and Mundelein and Loyola to find a way to talk about this together, because they shared this broader Catholic Christian tradition of justice.